Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Thank you so much for joining me here today. Welcome to Yes But Why, episode 322, my discussion with Wendy Salome. But first, I thought I'd mention about how Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. You know, Audible is that audiobook app everybody's talking about. We're all listening to podcasts, of course. Why not also listen to books as well? And you know, there's some really great voice actors out there working hard to bring these books to life for you. In fact, don't tell Ryan Gosling, but I honestly preferred the reading of Gray Man that I listened to on Audible to the movie on Netflix. The narrator, Jay Snyder, did such a good job of embodying these characters. I just really loved it. So you can enjoy a book just like that too. Go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy, sign up and get your account today. It's a new and exciting way to get entertained. So now, let me tell you about my guest this week. This week, Yes But Why chatted with Austin-based improviser and producer Wendy Salome about how hard it can be to allow yourself to be creative. And this is really something we all struggle with, so we really got into it. I mean, why can't we just enjoy ourselves? We had a great chat about balancing work life with family life, with creative life. And honestly, I needed this conversation, so I hope it helps you as much as it helped me. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 322, Wendy Salome on giving yourself permission to be creative. Enjoy. I'm Amy Jordan, and this is
Yes But Why.
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 This is the Yes But Why podcast.
When you were a child, what was the way that you played with your siblings? What were the games that you played with them?
I think most of my play was just, I was thinking a lot of it is like recreating like Charlie's Angels or, you know, like stuff that we had seen on TV and now we're going to play that, which sounds so old fashioned. I was born in 1970. So that's what, you know, like a lot of, it was the time when television was like finite because you could only watch your favorite show on that one time when it came on. So we just did a lot of that kind of play. And I don't have a lot of like, strong memories of playing as a child, but I do feel like I was definitely like a bossy playmate, you know, like in charge, just like an organizer, like, this is how we're going to do it. This is what's going to happen. You're going to be this person. I'm going to be this person, you know, and now let's make this scene, you know, or let's pretend like this is what happened and act it out or whatever.
Were you the older sibling?
I was. I'm the oldest. And then I had a brother who, he died right before I went to school, but he was about 16 months younger than me. So we were pretty close. And then a younger sister who's 4 years younger. And so when she came along, then it was even more, you know, like,
I'm in charge.
More people to boss around. So, and it really does sound so old fashioned, but we grew up outside playing on the street, running with friends, a lot of just exploring the neighborhood. And, you know, we were in the suburbs of San Antonio that were quickly growing. So just roaming the new construction and, you know, playing in there, which is so funny now. I'm like, I'm sure that was a liability hazard for everyone involved, but
They didn't care about that back then. Liability, schmiability. No one cares.
Exactly. I mean, we just had so much fun exploring and playing. So, bike riding and, you know, just a little pack always traveling together.
Was it always your brothers and sisters, or did you have like neighborhood friends as well?
Neighborhood friends. It was more a group of us that were close in age that would travel together. And we moved, I was born in Fort Worth, and then we lived in New Orleans for a few years when I was really young. But we moved to San Antonio when I was 8. And that from that point is when we had like the other kids on our cul-de-sac. We were just all like a group, a mob that traveled around together. So we did that. And I read a ton. I was a very avid reader, to the point that I remember getting in trouble a few times, like not very, pretty rarely. I was very much like by the book person, but if I did get in trouble and I got sent to my room, I used to just be like, okay, and I'd go to my room and read. And so at some point my mom told me like, go to your room and you're not allowed to read. And she verbalized like later in my life, like I felt like a terrible mom. Like who tells their kid not to read? But you were having fun and you weren't supposed to be having fun. And, I don't know. That is such a funny, I feel like that's one of those little, like, tells a lot about me as a person stories.
I think the most that I learned from that story is the idea that you listened.
Yes.
The idea that when said, don't read, you didn't. Yeah. It wasn't like you were like, oh yeah, okay, mom. Yeah, and then I read everything. Yes. That's when I learned how to speed read.
Exactly. Like, or like build a fort and be like, no, I'm just hanging out over here. You know, rule follower to the, that's why it was so rare that this ever came up, to be honest.
Oh man. Yeah, that's funny. I mean, I definitely feel maybe more in my adult life than my child life, but I definitely feel like I'm the kind of person where like when a person like lays down a hard rule like that, I'm all like, all right, let's see how I can get around this.
Yes. No, that's my husband. And so we're a very interesting couple. I mean, I'm a firm believer that it takes both. So I'm appreciative of that because that most of the times that we've had like really unexpected successes of different things has been that approach. And, you know, if we had done my approach, we would still be standing in line behind, you know, 300 people or whatever.
Sure. You know, I mean, I'm pro both ideas. I'm at this point in my life as a lady in her 40s, I'm going to say I am pro the idea of doing what you're told and listening to instructions and doing what is instructed to you. I'm like, they're not just making it up for no reason. But I also do appreciate, I'm also the person who's all like, hey, listen, if that law's not for you, just don't do it. People that's are like, what do you mean? And I was like, listen, I don't care what the bathroom says. Go in the door.
Totally.
Like, I don't care what the law is.
Totally. I mean, that's exactly what my kids love to tease me because it's almost like I just find rules for myself, you know, like, I'm like, well, it doesn't say that that's the rule, but what it seems like that would be the rule. So we should do this. And then the rest of my family is like, mom, no.
You know, I'm going to say too, though, that while you're right, that the, like the pair of like one person who's going to, you know, write inside the, you know, inside the lines and the other who's not is very helpful. I also find that having both of those for raising kids would probably be helpful too, because then they find their own way to deal with it. And it's not just like, because kids are always going to reject their parents, right? So if they're both pointing rules, 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 they're going to be like, no, I'm anti-rule. Yeah. I'm not into rules. You know why? Because those parents told me not to.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, our kids are too confused. They're like, I don't know what I'm against.
Oh, yeah. No, totally. You know, to that end, when you got older, what was your big, you know, go out on your own and do for yourself? Like, how did you get out of the parental vibe in your family? You get older, you're in college, maybe not until your 20s. Sometimes I've recently realized now that I'm like talking to other theater people that are like between the ages of 18 and like 29, let's be real.
Yeah.
Like that the time when they're rejecting their parents in a hardcore could be that whole section, which is fine. Yeah. They have to become themselves. But I wonder, what was your thing? Like, how did you express yourself and become adult you for the first time?
Ooh, that's a really good question, because I feel like college was still very much about, you know, trying to do exactly what my parents wanted and be practical. And I did high school theater, but that was not an option. Like, that's not a job. How are you going to get a job? And I ended up getting a scholarship in the College of Communications, and I was able to major in radio, TV, film at UT. And so even though, like, it's so funny now, because I'm like, really, that's like, it's not like that's that much, you know, I don't know, like, you're not going to have a surefire job coming out with an RTF degree. But to them, because I had that scholarship, it was a more respectable profession. And so I spent all of college, you know, kind of doing that. I think I probably just kind of came into my own. It's interesting, because when I came into my own would probably be more when I got married and, you know, my husband and I just kind of started our own life. But that was probably the point when I was least creative in my life as well, because when we got married, I went into physical therapy school and he went into dental school. And so we went into this like intense science-based, you know, life for just like studying and memorizing. And no, I mean, I don't even remember if we even had talent. I'm trying to think of like what creative thing there was. I don't think there was very much.
Do you think you guys made that decision, like, to do what people say, like, you know, get something solid, have some, like, foundation, like, you have to have that career before you're allowed to do any of the creative stuff, right? So you had to lock it down.
Yes. And, you know, my husband was a philosophy major. He graduated from UT with a philosophy degree.
Even worse. You got a scholarship to do radio. You're legit. He's this guy who's like, have you heard of Plato? You're like, oh, this
guy. Yes. So, I mean, what a swing from that to dental school. He has also, though, always been really much more in touch with his creative side. And so he's always had, he dives deep on hobbies and he's always had something going. And I just, I think I have a really fraught relationship with creativity is what I realized when I was thinking about this podcast and thinking back about creativity in my life. And most of the times that I've been creative, I'm making myself do something, 'cause I'm like, I know I need to be creative. Like, you know, I know there's a box of all the things that makes you a whole person, and creativity is one. So I'm going to check this box, and then I do it and end up loving it. But I've always come at it almost in a backwards way, even like radio, TV, film, in a way where it's like, I have to have some kind of a justification, you know, that it's, there's something practical to all of my creative endeavors.
No, but that was legit built into you. I mean, like, the idea of you thinking your RTF degree was, like, somehow more legitimate because of some random side scholarship that you got, like...
Yes. Yes.
You know, whoever took the classes you took that paid for it, same thing. Yes. Like, they didn't get a different education, you know, they didn't get different job offers after. Like, it was just like, it's all what you do with the lessons and whatnot. But yeah, they definitely, capital T, make you feel like, you know, you have to have it all figured out. And boy, man, certainly at college, are you telling me? I mean, I'll learn stuff. And guys, if you're in college age and you're listening to this right now and you're like, but I need to figure my whole life out. Oh my God, no you don't. Read a couple books and learn some things. Write in a journal. Relax. You don't need to know nothing right now.
No.
It's fine. When you have to go to dental school, that's when you really need to know, right?
Yes.
But not until you're like, okay, I'm settling into some specific thing. Now, I like the idea, though, that later in your life, you've sort of maintained this, like, I'm nervous to do creative stuff, but I feel like I should. Is it should, again, because, like you said, that's what they say you should do? Or is it, like, do you come back at it? Because you do it a lot. This isn't like you did it twice and you were like, hey, that was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Like, you keep returning to this in your life. Do you find personal satisfaction? Is there some part of the creative process that builds something else in you?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that even to the most recent creative project that I did, I have that that resistance of like, I don't think of myself as a creative person, period. Like that's just a given. But then, so then I kind of like make myself do these things and then I do them and I have fun. Like I just have fun. And so the thing that keeps drawing me back to it is the ability to just lose yourself in something, which I struggle with a lot, you know? And so it's such a gift to be able to do that. And I think that's the appeal. And it's so funny to me that it seems like that appeal should just like, you should experience that. And then that's like, that's it. So now you flip that switch in your brain. So now keep going after it, but it's like starting over every single time.
I like the idea that you're like, at some point I should allow myself to be happy, right? No, I don't think that's a thing. No, yeah. I think you kind of get to a point where, and I'm not saying like never in your life will you be like, oh, I'm feeling happy about this. I just mean like, I feel like that's some like heavy therapy work to get to why is it that my brain won't let me enjoy stuff, right?
Yeah, and play.
Yeah.
Play is a big part of it.
But, you know, we came off the cusp earlier as we were chatting about our involvement in the jaded Gen X generation. Yes. And the idea of we came off of, you know, we had parents who were like just insistent about jobs. Like it was just like, so you have to have a foundation and it's very important for this. And I mean, if my whole life was like, it was sold to me as if like, get yourself a blue collar job. You take care of the world. You take care of yourself. Like, yep. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot to put on your shoulders. And it's really just a matter of like watching how people live their lives and like, what do they do to allow themselves the joy in the moments? Because I get you. I was just talking to somebody like yesterday about the idea that they can't even have a fun, like they can't do fun activities unless there's some sort of work related thing to it.
Yeah, it's so wild. Well, it's funny when you were just talking, something really clicked for me that has never clicked for me before, which is when I did physical therapy, I always did pediatrics. I've always worked with kids and talk about play. I mean, I worked with birth to 3-year-olds. I was on the floor, literally playing with babies to help them learn to crawl and walk. And it's so funny because all this time I'm like, oh, PT is not, it's not creative. And you're doing this very scientific thing, but actually that is, and I miss it. That's something I've been, now that my kids are finally getting settled, I'm thinking about going back into. And it's like, man, just put a kid in front of me and I will play all day long. I just like have a blast.
Yeah. Oh, to be honest, that's why I bring up children up top, because I think that children are the natural essence of play, that who you are as a child is a reflection of who you are as an adult. If you can only try to embrace the freedom that you had at the time, there is a moment. And I've seen this in like literal action working summer camps with kids, right? There is a moment between like 8 or 9 when there's a darkening, like when the kids kind of like they realize that death is a real thing, and then they are like grappling with that, and then they kind of, their sort of mind goes a bit more philosophical, you know. I feel like it's like a mental leap that they have around that time. And there's hormones, right? So they start, the hormones start, they're not at 8 or 9, they're not really like causing too much trouble yet, but they're in there and they're causing a little bit of trouble. And that trouble is the idea of, you can decide whether you like are happy with something or not. And not to say that my 5-year-old doesn't sometimes have sad days, but like, I feel like there's just a moment in your life where it's like, you kind of realize sort of a sadness about the world, and then that kind of doesn't go away. And then you kind of have to just deal with that for the rest of your life. Like your life after that is then like the traumatic acceptance of actual adult life forevermore. Now, 8-year-olds are rough. You try to talk to them and you're like, ooh, wow, this is really deep and philosophical. I don't know if I can handle this. Whenever they do improv scenes, they're always very serious. And I'm like, okay. Cool. I'm glad that you wanted to say goodbye to him as he died on the battlefield. But guys, where did we even come up with this idea? What was happening? You know, they're always coming up with these things. But then I would move on to middle schoolers, right? Just a little bit older, maybe in the 10 to 14 range. These guys, wacky, wild. Yes. They're like, you know what? Life is crazy. Let's be insane. And they have crazy jokes. They got like poop jokes. They're like super into physical gags. Oh, punching themselves in the face. I love it, right? Absolutely best ever. And then it switches again. High school, they're like, do you know how this affects the world politically? And you're like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, we can do a scene. We can do a political comedy scene. Sure. Yes. You know, I'm working with them and I see this ebb and flow. And because I'm watching this with kids as I'm teaching theater, which I'm trying to teach hilariously, I'm trying to teach the same thing to every group. Yeah. And it ends up being different because their reactions to the source material, right? And it helped me realize that we are in this journey always, right? We're always moving between, oh my God, it's terrible. Did you know that we're all going to die? It's going to happen. And you're like, oh yeah. Oh, you just found out? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. Then it's like, who cares, right? Okay, cool. Yeah. I'm going to throw this water balloon in my own face. Like there's a part of, and then there's later where you're like, okay, but life is serious and I need to do something about it, right? Yes. And we get in these flows, right? And I feel like we need to acknowledge our own adult flows and the way that wherever we're at and try to use, I think, creativity, not just in a check the box kind of way, but use it to help us learn something about ourselves, to help us get to the point. Like, how did those kids figure out how to do politics when they were older? Well, they wrote comedy sketches first, and then they were like, oh, wait, I can say this, but if I say it this way, people are going to listen to it, as opposed to if I say it a different way. Yeah, that's how you can share your, you know, you can spread whatever political beliefs you want. You can move forward on whatever message you have in your own life. Like, this is how you send the message out, you know? And I just feel like that's something that we all are doing as creatives. And whenever I'm feeling weird or I don't know what to do, I try to figure out where I'm at in that flow, in that flow.
That totally makes sense thinking about that too, because I think I'm getting ready. I'm like on the cusp of coming out of the life is real serious. Just to, you know, sending a kid off to school, another one in high school, my husband and I both dealing with sick parents. It's just like, and then being in this, like, oh my God, I'm 52. So just, you know, like this point in my life of, you know, it's like, what am I going to be when I grow up? You know, kind of thing.
Okay. I have to give this to you. Well, strap in, audience. You've heard this. I have this theory that we all live. The podcast has just switched from a theater podcast now just directly to Amy's 18-year theory and how she tells creative people across the world.
I love it.
So my theory is that every 18 years we become a new person.
Whoa.
And it's the flow of our sort of like hormonal, like we were talking about with the kids, from like pure joy through to the darkening of realization, through to how do I use this? Or like, screw this craziness. Okay, now how do I use the craziness? Like there's a flow of that every 18 years for all of us. And the reason being is that 18 years is long enough to live a full life and then to move on from whatever it is that you want to do, right? Yeah. You'll find that, so the breakup, it's a 0 to 18, 18 to 36, 36 to 54. Exactly. And then where are we? 54 to 72, I want to say, right?
Wow.
So these are the main ones, right? But we very much ignore in life 36 to 54 and 54 to 72. We were like, by the time you're 36, you should have figured it out and that's it. That's all you've got for the rest of your life. And you're like, cool, but I have a whole nother, all the stuff I've done before, I'm going to do that one again But now I'm here. What is this?
Totally.
Like, yeah.
Oh, I love that. And well, I was thinking, I mean, part of all of that, you talk about hormones, of course, when you're 18, but you got to talk about, for women especially, you got to talk about hormones when you're 54 as well. Like, mm-hmm. even, I mean, my first instinct was to think about parenting. So, you know, that 36 to 54, you know, a big chunk of that is just up to my eyeballs in parenting.
Yeah.
And then and the end of it is getting the kids independent and launched off. And so there's that way, but even if you didn't have kids, you still have the way that your body betrays you as you, you know, approach 54. And, you know, just like I call it second, like being a teen, you're just having like reverse adolescence basically. And it's not fun. I mean, it's fun. It's been fun for me in the sense of having a sense of humor about it. You know, it's so weird, you know, the parallels that happen with it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The parallels are, I think, something that we don't acknowledge. And if we don't acknowledge them, then we start to feel like we're doing something wrong. And we think that the way we're living our life and the choices we made were not right for X reason or Y reason. That's why you'll notice in the mid 50s, people do a lot of divorcing. They think, oh, I've made this wrong decision. Let me do this other thing. Sometimes it's the best move. And you're like, oh, yeah, that was right.
Yeah.
And sometimes you see it and you're all like, you didn't need that Miata. Like, why?
Yeah.
She's 22. What do you guys talk about?
Yes.
Like any number of things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a matter of where the way you look at your life and the way that you, what you think you want and what you think you deserve, right? So to go back to this idea of we don't allow ourselves to have fun, right?
Yeah.
We want to do these creative projects, but if they're not, you know, heck, are you kidding me right now? Like, we could talk every day, but we don't. I found a way to like socially have a conversation with you by making it a podcast episode. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
There's no, I have to create this construct around anything that I do so that it makes it feel like, well, this is worthwhile because it's work. Right.
Yeah. Look, I'm going to have this thing that I finish at the end of it.
Exactly. Exactly. This will help other people. So it's a good thing that we're having this conversation. It's like, okay, I guess, but also couldn't it just be a great creative chat? Like about like reigniting, you know, where you're at.
Yes.
Because I think there's part of accepting your own, like you have to move through that. And the other thing is, so 0 to 18, your parents are in charge. They tell you what to do. All of your things are built around them, including this idea of, you know, theater isn't really a career that you should have and you can go to it, but only if they pay you to do it.
Yes.
Right. Like, okay, I guess so. Sure. But then 18 to 36, and you'll see this a lot of people, especially people who like really didn't get along with their parents. It is a radical becoming themselves. It is an intense time and people think, oh, it's just your 20s. So sorry. No,
it is
also your 30s, like because the 20s are about messing it up and the 30s are about learning from those mistakes and trying it again and figuring out what you really do want. So by the time you're 36, maybe you've accomplished a goal or two and you can move forward with the lessons you've learned and try to do some other thing, right?
Yeah.
In my case, similar to in your case, I started parenthood. Right. I have my child at 39. So this will be my parental section.
Yes. Right.
But because I started late, I have this view of how it goes. Now, my sister had a child at 21. So her view is very different.
Wow.
Her life and the way she saw it, her 18 to 36 was parenting. Right.
Yes. Yes.
And
she's
so
probably having fun now, I would guess. Like, I would guess the 36 to 54 is the fun.
Yeah. Yeah. She's laughing at me. She goes like, I can't believe you have a kid in kindergarten. Oh, yeah. My kids are out of the house. I'm like, well,
yes.
Sorry. That's just what's going on with me. But for me, in my career, in my life, you know, I wanted to do all sorts of, I spent 0 to 36 doing every theater thing I absolutely wanted to do. I didn't even date till I was 25 because I was like, listen, I'm a theater person. I need to get these gigs. I need to work in theater. I need to get out there and get a resume filled with activities. Yes. Like, that was my effort, right? That's what I wanted to do. And so I did that, right? In the same way that like you and other people are like, I'm going to get a job, have a solid foundation, get education so that I can do this kind of thing. And then I will take care of myself. I find this is also a mom thing. To be like, how can I take care of everyone else first?
Yes.
But now that I'm here, even though I am in parent mode and I am taking care of everybody else while I'm taking care of myself, I feel like I know more about what I need in this moment than if I were a 21-year-old mom, you know?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I can't wrap my brain around it. It's like, it is weird because I think, you know, how much more energy and all of that that you would have had doing it then. But I just can't imagine. I feel like I barely could take care of my own self. So
I was an intense 20-something. You don't want to hand me a child in any way. That was not a good time. Yeah. Absolutely not. Yeah. Oh man. Well,
that's a really cool theory. I like that a lot. I had not heard that before, and it makes that makes a lot of sense actually.
Well, at this point I feel like there's internet record of me saying it so many times that it's pretty much my theory.
I need
to write it into a book, just so it exists. Because for me, it started out as a way for myself to process how I was flowing. And then I realized it was helpful to tell other people because I want people to feel comfortable in their own flow. Like, for instance, right now, you're right at the end of your cycle, which means it's almost like you're like a 17-year-old trying to decide where to go to college at this point. Like, you're in that point in your mind. Yeah.
You know, this is really funny because my son, he'll turn 17 in October. Uh-huh. So I'm realizing that we're going to be like on our, I think he'll be 18. I think that we'll be pretty close, like to the 18 and the 54, you know, or whatever. But I am really dabbling with going back to school, and I love teasing him that we should look at colleges together and like, you know, where are you going to go? And wouldn't it be funny if I went to the same school you went to? And, you know, he thinks it's hilarious, but I don't know. I love when something fits into a box now. Like, does it make sense? This is why I want to go back to school. Cause I'm a 17-year-old in this.
I mean, it makes total sense. This is when people change their careers. This is when people change their whole lives. This is when people are like, you know what? I want to live in Montana. You know, like they just go. I mean, how many, I don't know how many friends you have who have made a big change like that, but I feel like I have a lot.
Lots.
You know what I mean? Where it's all like, oh, really? They're not married anymore? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, Interesting. Or like, oh, he lives in Indonesia? Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Great. Mm-hmm. When did he get there? Okay.
Yeah.
Like, people just make big moves because, well, they can. You get to a certain age, and if you're lucky enough, you have a little capital to make these wild decisions and do these things. And, you know, that way, my other thing to bring it up, to sort of bring, like, tie in a bow with the creativity idea is that, you know, you might be at a point right now where it's like, yeah, starting new projects isn't really where my mind's at. I need to get myself settled in the next part of my journey. And then once you're settled, maybe you'll do another thing. Who knows? And I like the idea that you're like, oh, I want to go back to working with kids because, like, you know, you've done theater with kids. You know how fun that can be.
Yeah.
You know? It's a solid thing to get into, you know, and to use both the things that you really love and to, and by the way, it's work. But like, so tell me, you know, you mentioned how much you liked, you know, when you were working with the little kids. And as I mentioned, you have done theater with kids. How did that come together? Like, how did you make that happen?
So what's really funny is the way I did theater in high school, but always as a stage man. I mean, I did a little bit of stage acting, but I quickly figured out stage manager. So I'm like organized project manager person. And theater or even in the improv community, that's been my way. I kind of think of it as like watching from the sidelines or participating in a way. And I love supporting, you know, these creative endeavors. But the way I got into after the fact improv was through my kids, because my kids did camps with Kristen Henn. They started, I think my daughter started when she was 7. And Kristen Henn quickly became one of my most favorite people in the world. And I just could, she, watching her with a group of kids is like watching a magician or Yoda or whatever. And she just was amazing. And my kids loved it. They thrived. I felt like I just would preach about, you know, learning failure, trying, you know, trying new things, learning to say yes, learning to listen, all of the things that you get out of it. And through all of this, like supporting them and all of their pursuit of improv stuff, my husband got me the Cold Town $99 special 1 year for us to take level one together. And we ended up taking improv classes together and we had so much fun. It was just, so it was a blast. So I got back into, you know, to like what I guess I got into it originally, like learning improv myself, I think in 2018. The whole time my kids were also still doing it with Kristen. And so the first time I helped Kristen sometimes with her What's the Story Steve show that used to be on Saturday mornings, and we got to dabble in it there. And then got introduced to producing at Cold Town from the amazing Amy Knopp, who just she's just one of the most gifted producers and most generous producers, in that she thrives on teaching other people how to do it. And so I got to work on two shows with her concurrently. And one of them was my kids' first main stage, which was junior year abroad. And so it was really amazing to, like, I was a producer for that. So, man, I was like in the thick of it, proud mom, watching these. I mean, they had, it was a youth troupe along with like Nathan Soul and Michael Jastrow and Sanjay, you know, they got to play with all these amazing players. I was so jealous. Like, oh, look what you're doing, but so proud. And then also got to be a part of it. So.
Yeah, man. Now that's so amazing. I love that you got to produce that show with your kids and whatnot. You know, yeah. You're talking about this work that you did. I'm sure it was a lot of work. I'm sure put in a lot of hours, and, you know, everybody that was developing that put in a lot of time and a lot of effort. You should never, never second guess the importance of a stage manager or the support team. The people on stage are, you know, but a small sliver of the true creative team that needs to happen. And not everybody who has the ability to do accents or be funny on stage or, you know, look good in a pretty dress know how to organize and get people to do what they need to do and arrive on time and remember to bring water and who has the keys to the building and, like, you know, all the things. These are important details.
It's so true. And that actually, I mean, that's been kind of one of the biggest gifts for me, is just the improv. Most of my experience is the Cold Town improv community is full of the most creative, like, amazing people, and many of them are probably maybe have ADD or at the very least wouldn't call themselves organized. And so when I get to team up with them, like, it just, I don't know, we just like power up both of, they power up my creativity and I get to power up theirs by just giving a structure to what they're doing. So that happened this summer with Nathan Soul on the Emma Dilemma. I produced that, and just, like, I don't know, it was just a really cool experience to see how I could take the, like, he would give a lecture to the cast and I would take notes and then type them up for anyone who wasn't there. And then he would just be like, wow, that's like you were in my brain, you know? But I'm like, no, I just like took notes on what you said, you know? I don't know how to explain it, but it was.
You're like, no, you said that out loud. I just wrote it down.
Just wrote it down, literally.
And how did you know I was thinking that? You're like, no, no, you said it came out of your mouth.
Yeah. Well, and he, and but also just, he was so appreciative. He was so thankful for it. And so it just, I don't know, it made me realize it. Like, you really need both parts of that to make it work.
You really do. Even to harken back, you were talking about your husband earlier, how you guys are different in that way. You know, there are different parts of the creative brain all need to be represented. You know, we can't make this stuff unless we have all the people. Right. Yeah, I mean, the organizational vibe of it all. I mean, I have been part of creating theaters in many instances, and a lot of times there are just different personalities that are lending themselves to different parts. Like, this person needs to work on this thing because they empower people to do this. This person is really organized, so they need to do this thing. Like, and it's really just a matter of the collaboration, right? I mean, if nothing else, improv teaches us that every bit of the collaboration is the best part, no matter what part it is. Did you toss the idea out, or did you take the idea and run with it? Both good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
both sides of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, like, the other thing that's been really cool is that I think of myself as like the spreadsheet person or the communicator person that who rallies the troops or all of that. But by being immersed in these projects, you know, I still get like Nathan put me in the show, in the actual Emma Dilemma show, a few of the shows, and me telling him, you don't have to put me in. You have so many talented people, you know, just, and he, I just love that about him. He nurtures that creativity in all of us. And he was one of my kids' first coaches. And so he just, I'm in awe of his skill as a director and a supportive player. And so it's just a real gift to be able to like, to feel successful in this like more production side of things, but also get to stick my toes in the playing side of things and be just 100% supported beyond belief.
Yeah. It's also nice too, that you get to support somebody that you're so creatively excited by as well. I mean, apparently it has been established he was over the moon to have your help. Like, he couldn't believe that your brain worked the way that it did. So he's as enchanted with your skills as you are with his.
It was really funny coming out of the pandemic. So I did those two shows that I was describing where I was able to produce. It was Junior Year Abroad and My Own Worst Enemy. They were both smashing successes. It was phenomenal. And those both closed like mid-February 2020. So they closed, and concurrently, I was the chief of staff for Cool Town Theater. So I was working, I mean, I was always I was kind of the organizer of all of that kind of, all the projects, really, you know, I'm almost like a project manager, just making sure stuff was getting done and keeping track of it. And we kept on through the pandemic, but it got to, I'd say, I think it was about October where I just couldn't do it anymore. It was really, it was just kind of a devastating loss. I was so glad that they kept going, but I just didn't have a place in it anymore. I was like really lost. And I kind of thought like, that's it. That was a cool phase of my life, and I'm glad I did it. And Nathan reached out to me in April of this year and like, can we meet for coffee? I have a project I want to talk to you about. And we sat down and he described what he was going to do. And he was like, and I want you to work on it with me. And I said, no. He looked at me like I threw cold water in his face. And then I did this like, oh, wait. I was like, oh, yes, and yes, that's right. I'm not supposed to say no. That's not, you taught me that. Yes, yes. We talked through it more. And I realized like, I just was so insecure. I was terrified. I was like, why are you asking me? I haven't done this in so long. It's like, you don't know who you're talking to anymore. I'm not the same person. You know, it felt like a leap of faith on his part. And it ended up, he put together this, as does not surprise me in the least, this amazing team of people. And it was the best experience of coming out. I think for a lot of us, it was a great experience of coming out of the pandemic. It was a huge cast and crew. We did a system where in each show, half the people played and half the people crewed. Like, it was the crew was kind of part of the show. So, you know, because it was a mock daytime talk show. So it just, I think he really made a dramatic change for a lot of people's lives in that, you know, that show that we did this summer.
I love that he came to you and he wanted to work with you on this project. I think that says great things about what he saw in the collaboration that you guys had together. And I urge you to give yourself the credit of that. In that, you know, your skills were seen and, you know, he was coming to you to say, I see you and I want to work with you again. You're great at this.
I so appreciate that because it's so funny when I think back on it, I really do. I just remember thinking, you are great. Who are you talking to? I am like a shriveled up little raisin right now. I don't know who that person was who worked with you on those shows, you know, so long ago. So I loved his patience and his support and like his ability to see that, just what you described, because him seeing it in me helped me like believe that it might still be in there a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then sure enough, once we got the ball rolling, I was like, oh yeah, I remember this. Oh yeah, this is what we do. And I had so much fun, period, like in the game.
Absolutely. Yeah. So great. And that was Emma Dilemma, right?
Yeah, we did the Emma Dilemma this summer. And I think we ended up doing 7 shows. And it was a really cool format because it was all live streamed. And so it's all recorded. And that was a cool experience playing with my daughter, which was really funny because she does not enjoy, she generally will not play with me, but much like me, she cannot say no to Nathan. And he just envisioned, so we got to play a scene where she was a kid coming home from college and I was her mom, but I was acting like my 16-year-old son. So I was like a skateboarder, you know, lots of D's butts jokes and, you know. It was such a blast. We had so much fun.
That's so great that you're able to play with her and that you're able to have that experience, especially since she's, you know, just off at college now. So you guys were able to have that like bonding memory before it's like way too long in the past. And you're like, oh yeah, we should have done that. You know,
totally. I was so glad the timing just worked out with how he did the show that she was home from school and was able to jump in. So it was a real gift.
Yeah. You know, there's a few things that this discussion has made me think of. And one is what we were talking about earlier, when we were talking about the idea that the pandemic really deflated a lot of us. There were some people that like really kept it going and like were stayed strong and like got empowered and like, heck, they found a brand new art form to play with, online improv. Yeah. Like there were people that like really got into it, or like, you know, 3/4 of the people that we knew that didn't know how to use a computer all of a sudden became like Zoom experts. Yeah. Like they're doing like crazy backgrounds and like, you know, all sorts of crazy stuff on their, you know, like, wow, he learned a lot about that. Like, well, he's alone in his apartment, so he figured that out, right? But not everybody was like immediately infused by like a ridiculous amount of creativity. I mean, I personally hit the wall myself when the pandemic first started. I put on we made a video show that was like essentially a clip show of people's comedy videos that we just put together to be like, hey, don't be sad. Check out this funny stuff. Yes. And it was, we did 5 of them. And then I was like, I'm going to die. I can't continue to make this. Like, and I didn't, and believe me, as has been discussed in this conversation, and everyone who's listening knows this, I have been trucking along doing theater up the hill forever, like constantly, never not having a theater job, always working in that thing, doing it. So when I hit the wall and I didn't know what to do, I also felt like maybe I'm done. Maybe this is just the age when I'm not a person who does this anymore. Yes. Maybe I have to find another job. I mean, heck, the whole pandemic and it's like, let's take away all of your work kind of like vibe was very, I mean, I can't tell you the number of times my husband and I had a conversation where I was like, maybe I just get a job somewhere at like Best Buy or like HEB or something. And he's like, no. Yes, no,
thank goodness, right?
You've got to hold in. You've got to wait. We've only a little bit longer, a little bit longer. And I was like, okay, I guess, you know, yeah. But like, and if not for this, if not for the podcast, I wouldn't have done anything creative, really. I mean, I got back into writing just as sort of like a way to have time to myself.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that was, it was like, I'm in my house all day long with my husband and my child. What can I do? Yeah. Hey, let's find a time when I'm going to lock myself in the office. And no one can come in because mama's working on a project. Like, that was, but I mean, at first I didn't.
Oh my God.
I was just sitting there like, what am I writing right now? I don't know.
Yeah.
Now I've finally got something 2 years later. I finally like, oh, okay. This is an actual thing I'm working on. But it's like, it's just like, I didn't know what I was doing, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like part of the theory of flow of whatnot, this was a break in the flow. Everybody had the same break, same time. Doesn't matter where you were at in your own journey. This was shutdown time. This was the moment when it was like, by the way, did you know that everything bad could happen all at once?
Yes.
And it can. Like, it was like, I feel like every wives tale became true. Like, it was like all sorts of insanity. You know, there was, we didn't know what to do. It makes total sense, especially given the larger story that we've been discussing of you, that the lady who was like, I need a basic foundation. I need to know that I am okay before I can be creative.
Yes.
I need to make sure the everything around me, all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. Ain't no T's crossed or I's dotted in 2020.
No.
We didn't even have a pen. Like, that's how much we were not dotting I's and crossing T's.
Yes.
Like, we had no idea what to do. So why would you ever have allowed yourself to have creativity?
Yeah,
it makes total sense.
It was, like, so overwhelming. And I had just signed up. It's funny that you mentioned writing because I had just signed up for a writing. I can't remember, but like a small writing class that was in person, and we had met, I think it was 6 classes and we had had 4 of them. And then the pandemic hit and we had the last 2 on Zoom. And I can't tell you what a bitter taste it left in my mouth. It just was like a plane crashing. It just, I hated Zoom. I hated trying to, you know, that's when we were all trying to figure out how it even worked and it was brand new. And then the teacher moved to, like, you know, like how a lot of people did at that time is like, well, we're not in person anymore, but I'm going to move to North Carolina to be closer to my parents with my young toddler or whatever.
Yeah.
I totally appreciated, but I was like, you're leaving me. And so I had all these reasons to have like, to close that, what felt like to just close that door and just be pissed, like, that's not gonna work anymore.
Yeah.
So
I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that are like that, though, you know, that are like, life gets hard and there's a lot of stuff that gets in between giving yourself any joy, you know.
Yeah Well, and it just finally, I took a like an online writing class in the spring, an introduction to personal narrative, and that was the first I think that like open the door to me to even think about improv again. It's just like, all right, this is fun. I like dabbling in this stuff. So
it's hard to get to the place. And I know that it is difficult. If you had advice for someone who was like having, you know, hitting that wall, because I feel like once you got to Emma Dilemma, you sort of made it through that pandemic. Like, I guess it's over now. It was like, okay, well, it's not over now. I might not do this full time again. I might not be running the theater. You know, I might do something else, but I can do it, and I can do it when I feel like it, and I can do it when it suits me, or when the project is something that I'm interested in. How did you get to the mental place to allow yourself to do it?
I think the biggest thing was letting go of the need for it to be like it was before, which I didn't realize how much I had clung onto that, and then how bitterly angry I was. And this is all compounded by Cold Town losing its space on top of everything, but I still have to drive by it every day and see that goddamn brewery and just like seethe, you know? So there's a lot of, there's just a lot of deep feelings that were just wrapped up in it, but somehow When I told Nate, I was like, I can't say no to Nathan. When I said, yes, I'll work on this project with you, I was like, oh crap, I got to start doing stuff. And then I signed up for another improv class, which I actually will take improv classes for the rest of my life. I love it. I love that kind of playing, that like lower stakes fun. And then it was just like, it was rusty. I wore a mask half the time because my mom was immunocompromised. And, you know, before that I thought, you can't do improv with a mask on. I'm like, oh, it turns out you can, you know? I just had to finally like actually just do it and recognize that the seeds or the core of what I love is still there, even though it wasn't the same.
Yeah.
I think that was it. So I think just being open to the new version of, because I think any creative thing that you do has probably been changed, whether it's visual arts or, you know, even podcasting or, you know, theater, all of it looks different now. But I think giving yourself that permission for the grief and bitterness, you know, I think that I fought it for so long. I probably could have gone through that process quicker if I had just allowed myself to grieve it. But instead I was just angry for so long.
There's a lot of that. And I don't think you should begrudge yourself whatever journey you had to go through.
Yeah.
Because I think that's something that's happening to everyone right now in the world, and why there's a lot of like wild pop off actions, why people are taking guns places, why people are doing vigilante justice, they think all sorts of things. They're making moves because they don't know what else to do. And they've been so sad, and they just feel like the world isn't what it was.
Yes.
So just burn it down. Like world was burned down, might as well burn down the world. Right.
Yeah.
And it's really hard. It's really hard. I feel like even you saying like the world was not the same, but I have to adjust. I have to move into whatever the next bit is and enjoy it for what it is in the new. That also, I truly believe, is the lesson of the transition for you in the cycle. Like, and all of us, right? Like this is a messed up one. My 36 transition, when things first got crazy, was when TNM crumbled. I was in charge of the theater. And then it exploded.
Wow.
That was what happened to me at the end of my last cycle. And my whole world was gone. It was no longer very similar in the way that it was like, and yet almost very similar. As everything went down, people are like, how do we fix this, Amy? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what to do. You know, and to be totally honest with you and with the audience, really, I haven't really done real improv since then. I've blamed it on having the kid because it's an easy blame.
Yes.
And he's real cute, so no one's mad, right?
Right.
But that's it. It's because I'm in that place. I'm in that angry, yucky place where everything. I'm so glad I've met all these wonderful people online to do improv, this whole wide journey of, you know, where we're at and meeting new people. And honestly, finding out improv is way bigger than I ever thought it was, right?
Yeah.
And that the rules are different everywhere. And it's like, what? Oh, this is amazing. But I still have this yucky pit in my stomach in the same way that when I see the Cold Town Building, it makes me upset too. I don't drive down Airport Boulevard anymore because I'm like, no, it's good.
Yeah, it's too much. Yeah.
And I mean, Cold Town's a larger part of the bigger story. And it also just like twists me up inside of like, you can't have anything good.
I totally get it. Well, I was thinking too, I was thinking about like kind of sticking my toes into things and coming out of it. Every single point that happened, people were beyond belief supportive. Like I've never, ever been more supported in anything. We had, I'm also part of a, well, we haven't played in a long time, but an all-mom troupe called My Secret Friend. And we hadn't played since well before the pandemic, and we got invited to do Pioneers for a special, like right around Mother's Day. And I made myself, I was terrified, but I made myself do it. It would be, that would be actually my first time on stage before the Emma Dilemma. And boy, I'll tell you, there is no support like the support of a group of mom improvisers. Like literally, it was the most fun. I could not believe it. It was the most amazing thing. So I think for anyone who's even nervous or scared, just knowing like everyone out there is just like, is excited for stuff to be back, and they just want to support you.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody's gone through it. Everyone who's listening to this, no matter what country you're in, no matter where you're at, no matter how old you are, we all went through this. And if you feel yucky about it, we do too. And it's okay. It's okay. I mean, it's really just about keeping that little spark, that little flame inside of you to keep it going, to, you know, work on different projects. Some projects, here's the other thing. Some projects, they might not last forever. Yeah. Heck, I was thinking the other day, you know, maybe I should find an end time for the podcast and just call it like, hey, that's enough. I put a lot out there. Enjoy this, right? Who knows? Because I'm in my, you know, I'm in a few years into my new journey. I've got the kid. It's a different world now. I'm doing different stuff.
Yeah.
Now I'm writing more than I am performing on stage. Like, it's kind of a different thing. But I do appreciate being able to have conversations. I mean, with people like you, Wendy, who were like kind of picking apart this thing where it's like, it's all right that we've taken breaks. And it's okay that we're not doing it all the time. It's about caring about doing it. It's about wanting to be part of the creative world. And honestly, it's just about an open mind to the world experience. I mean, that's what creativity is. It's about being interested in the way other people see the world. And so you explore that in various ways. Either you explore it by playing a character who they are, either you explore that by writing something. This character, I wonder what this person would feel like. Or in this instance, it's about interviewing people to be like, really? Is that how you feel? Interesting. I feel similarly, right? Like, and finding that common ground to connect on, because if, you know, connecting and being friends isn't creative, I don't know what is, you know?
Seriously, it's like the most creative thing. It's so true. Oh my God. I love it.
Oh my goodness. All right. One last question, Wendy, and then I'll let you go for your day. What are you doing to fill up your creative cup? How are you? What are you doing? Are you watching TV? Are you taking violin lessons? What are you doing?
So I just started, I've had two classes of the storytelling classes through Merlin Works.
Ooh.
And I'm really excited about that possibility. I mean, it's still like a little baby idea, but I like the idea of how it might overlap with like some of the writing, the personal narrative stuff that I was getting into. So I was thinking about it. I was like, it's not output at this point, because it is the thing that I tell my family, I'm out of here. I'm going for 2 hours. I'm doing this thing, you know, and then for that, now I'm listening to lots of the Moth Radio Hour and listening to lots of stories. And that really is, I just love how that gets your brain going. So I think that's where I am now. I mean, it's been a great, it's just been two classes, but it's going to be a really fun experience.
I love it. I too have been quite open to, you know, new kinds of classes to take, to be like, you know what, somebody fill me up. What do you know? Tell me, I want to know about it.
Yeah. There's a lot out there.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope that some of the stuff that's still online maintains online, because there are some cool workshops I've been able to take that I'm like, man, I never would have met these people ever if not for this.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So wild.
Oh, that's so cool.
Wendy, thank you so much for being on the podcast with me, for exploring this topic with me. I really appreciate you doing the deep dive on creativity for me.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. Thanks so much. It was great to talk.
Thank you for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all of our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.